Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff I've Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. And today we are back with our first book club of 2024 with a very recent novel from 2023. So spoilers, if trying to avoid them. I will say, I'm not going to talk about the ending too much. So if you want to go and read it.
This was a TikTok find, by the way, that was intriguing to me because fan fiction, which is Annie's thing. And then you had talked about Wattpad, which is like what is typically used for K-pop
people.
Fan fiction. And yes. I did, when I was looking up YN, the first, one of the third results was BTS YN. So I guess it's a huge thing. I know nothing about this, but I was interested by the description the TikToker was giving, including Kafka-esque, which I do like Kafka. It's interesting to see that level of surreal novelist today, which I guess China Melville is kind of similar to that to me, because go ahead, this is not my style of fiction. And for me, like the surrealist, not my thing, because it takes me forever to figure out what the f*** is happening, which was the theme in this entire thing for me as I was listening to Audible, not a sponsor right now. But like, I was like, what is happening? Who? What? So that's kind of my thing. China Melville, apparently, BT Dub, side note, did a novel with Keanu Reeves.
Recently?
Just recently. Recently.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know. Anyway, moving on.
That's just funny because I'm going to talk about some of my experiences in this realm, and I did have a huge crush on Keanu Reeves as Neo. So it's just kind of funny relationship I wasn't expecting. Yes, it is very surreal. So we are talking about the 23 novel by Esther Yee called YN or Y/N. That stands for Your Name, for people who don't know the fan fiction world. But basically,
I was one of those people, because for the longest time I thought it was yes, no, which is implied in the novel as well. But I was like, what?
Yes, I'm going to talk about my experience with this. But basically, it is a type of self-insert fan fiction wherein it will be a character, in my experience, usually a dude, and they are with your name. And as the reader, you are supposed to put in your name. You can even like download it and it will replace your name for every instance that it says Y/N. So it is a type of fan fiction. So the story follows our narrator, who, by the way, we never get her name, after she becomes obsessed with a member of a K-pop band named Moon, eventually leaving. She eventually goes to Seoul in South Korea because he kind of disappears, and she's located in Berlin, Germany at first. She goes in order to find him. It is a very surreal story. It blurs the lines between fanfic, fandom, and reality. And yes, she does post this self-insert fanfic online after attending a concert with a flatmate, which, by the way, she did not seem interested in going to.
Yeah, it sounded like she's one of those that was like, I don't want to be caught up in this. I'm not ready to love something.
Yeah, and then she really did.
And she knew herself.
Yeah, very quickly it happens. Yes. So while she is in Seoul, she meets a woman named Oh who works at a shoe factory. And Oh enters the narrator's name into a lottery to go to the band's headquarters. And the narrator wins and she meets Moon. And later, she returns to Oh, who wants the narrator to feel something real. And it doesn't seem like the message goes home. It deals with fandom, obsession, celebrity culture, loneliness, and parasocial relationships. It is an award-winning debut for Yi, who has said that it's an examination on mass consumption and who and how we interact with art and literature. But she has been clear it is not a criticism of K-pop and fandom.
Yeah. I think she mentions just like her fascination of loving something so much.
Yes. And we do have a couple quotes throughout this one from her. Most of them are from an NPR interview that she did about this book. Here's one. To speak, I guess, specifically to my narrator's case, it seems to me that she wants, and again, related to this desire for love to practice devotion, but it seems to me that she is capable of meditating upon a single object for a very long period of time. And of course, there's a lot of irony in the fact that she is choosing to practice this meditation upon one of the most, you know, poppy, rapid-paced forms of cultural consumption right now. But that's where she wants to do it. I'm not judgmental about, you know, K-pop or celebrity culture. That's really not my intention for the book. I'm not a journalist. I'm not here to write some kind of takedown or critique. I'm just very curious about this form of worship. And I take it very seriously in some sense. But it seems to me that it's speaking to some kind of absence within our current landscape. Yes. And this is especially interesting because the author has like the same background as the narrator, which I think was on purpose. Like at the end, there's a scene, there's like a movie of a painting. I feel like it's like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And I did want to, before we get into the themes, I wanted to briefly talk about my experience with YN fan fiction. Because I think that there is sort of a misunderstanding or like, maybe not even that, but I feel personally in my long storied experience with fan fiction, even if it's not a self-insert fic, which by the way is kind of interesting because it's supposed to be the reader inserts themselves, not necessarily the writer. Usually there is some element of self-insert fic to any fan fiction. This is my opinion. I could be wrong. But I feel like there's usually one character that you're like, that's me, or I'm vibing with that person, or I'm connecting with that person. And that's how a lot of our art is. That's not like unique to fan fiction necessarily. But I just think like there is a misunderstanding around, well, YN fan fiction is only this and that's different from every other fan fiction. I personally think that a lot of fan fiction is, let me put myself in the story somehow, or let me experience something with a character somehow. And that can be various levels. I personally don't really read YN fan fiction because the part, I like the other people doing the thing. I don't necessarily want to do the thing. So I don't really read it. But I see it all the time. It is a popular type of fan fiction. I also was thinking about this because I have had huge celebrity crushes in my life. It's usually more of like the fictional character they play, but you know. But one time I was thinking about this because I've kind of jokingly told the story of the time I wrote a self-insert fan fiction of me and Billy Joel Armstrong from Green Day. And I never published it. It was just for me. I burnt it. So we'll never know the beauties of what it was. But in it, because I was thinking about it, and I remember thinking when I wrote it, this is a happily married, way older man. So it wasn't about the romance part. It was like I just wanted someone to validate me. Like I just wanted to like somebody that I respected and did think he was hot. But I just wanted, there was no like, I want to end up with him. It was more like, I want to be in the band with you. I learned to play guitar for this whole thing. So sometimes, and the book talks about this a little bit, sometimes it's not even like a sexual thing or like a romantic thing. It's just like some, you want to feel desired or validated. I don't know. But I'll share some stories throughout. For content warning, there is a brief discussion of kind of disordered eating and obsession. Also cicadas, which was funny.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, she read this. Was she thinking about cicadas already? Or did this like pop out? Or was this after?
I know. Well, the cicadas sounds like it's going to be a menacing thing this summer.
Sounds like South Korea is going to hit some things too. Or they have. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
The big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Okay, so let's get into some themes. And one of them, as already alluded to with that quote, is kind of fandom as religion or religious awakening. So here's a quote. What I feared most wasn't death or global cataclysm, but the everyday capitulations that chipped away at the monument of seriousness that was a soul. My spiritual sphincter stayed clenched to keep out the cheap and stupid. So this is early on when she's like, no, I don't need to get involved in any of this. But her friend convinces her to go to a concert. And things quickly changed. Here's a quote from that. This screen, as large as a Berlin apartment building lying on its side, reproduced the happenings on stage with astonishing clarity, so that when the five boys drifted in as if by accident, heads bowed and hands clasped over their stomachs, I couldn't fathom how their real bodies, as small as grains of rice from where I stood, would survive an evening at the feet of their gigantic images. Thousands of women erupted into shrieks. I remembered Varva telling me that incidents of shattered eardrums at the boys' concerts were rising, prompting the entertainment company that managed them to recommend earplugs. But I saw none being worn by the fans around me. They were finally breathing the same air as the boys. Now was not the time to be less of a body. And yes, as mentioned, all the members of the band are named after celestial objects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not as I had originally wondered. And I still wonder because this was written in 2023. One of the bigger K-pop stars had just recently passed away. His name was Moon. Like, I think that's his surname. And he was for Astro. So I wondered if that had any influence. She doesn't know much about K-pop, so I don't know. I think she knows, like, this. I'm guessing this is somewhat based on, like, bigger fandoms that have a lot of fanfic out on Wattpad, specifically. So it goes on with a theme about fandom or obsession, which, again, maybe this is where I'm like, I don't have hobbies and loves for things, so this is very, like, I'm very unaware of this world. So to me, this was really uncomfortable looking. But I also know this is exaggerated. So I was just like, this book. Huh. Anyway, so here's a quote. The pack of boys called their fans livers because we weren't just expensive handbags they carried around. We kept them alive like critical organs. I suspected they used the English word liver because it sounded like lover. They could be coy like that, but I would much rather be Moon's liver than lover, which was kind of the implication. She wants to be inside of his body, not necessarily with his body.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk about that more. But it is one of the things that is unsettling about this. And I feel like a lot of the self-insert fan fiction, or just like when you love someone... This was written from a place where it almost seemed like she didn't like him. Like, right. He was, like, kind of coming from a very cold place. Whereas, in my experience, a lot of this comes from a very enthusiastic, happy place. Sometimes it's healthy and sometimes it's not. But it's not... The vibe the narrator was giving was very, like, cold to me. Interesting. But... This does hit the narrator hard and fast. She goes from, like, no, don't take me to this concert, to I must know everything. And one of the things I kind of laughed at is this quote. I tapped at my phone with vigor. I do hope you skip the occasional meal. When you're on the thinner side, your soul becomes more visible, almost hypodermic. You become a pure streak of energy, like the blue flame of a blowtorch. But the entertainment company better not put you on a diet. That would be disgustingly presumptuous. You know best how to flagellate yourself. No company can be as perverse as you. And I'd reached the end, the maximum character count. I pressed enter and watched my block of text disappear into a stream of far pithier messages. So, kind of like coming into this whole... the online social media part of fandom and already being like, I know you better. These other fans don't know.
Right.
I am the one.
This would be the Korean term of Saesungs, which is the intense fan that hits into what she does, stalkerish, and being almost dangerous, possessive, and angry that other people can love you.
Yes, yes. And just like the whole thing of like her telling him about the diet, but like the company shouldn't tell you about this,
right.
But me.
Right.
Yes. Here's another quote. Moon lay on his back. I crawled on top of him and brushed the hair out of his face. He looked back at me with pure recognition. Both encouraged by his gaze and unable to bear it, I closed my eyes and kissed him. But it was like pressing my lips against the back of my own hand. I felt what he felt of me. I felt what I felt like. With a start, I realized I had no sexual desire for Moon. My sexuality simply loved his sexuality, totally and unblinkingly, without my needing to know anything about what he did with his. I felt disgraced by life, its strange personal commandments that I couldn't simply want him. And yeah, I think this is sort of an interesting thing that a lot of people don't understand. Again, I feel like this is talking about a lot of times the person that you're envisioning, whoever that is a mirror of what you want, but it is like you. It's still a reflection of you.
Mm-hmm.
So in this moment, it's more like this is... Honestly, and we're going to talk about this more later, but this is like an avatar I've created of someone to sort of fill a void that I have. but it's more about you filling that void than you experiencing any kind of like desire or sexual need. It's like, there's something that's hurting inside me. What can I do? And so it's more of a reflection of you.
And another quote, "We once turned to philosophy for an interpretation of God, for that which lies beyond our comprehension. But philosophy has relinquished its authority to data. Now we know too much, especially what people want and how to give it to them. Religion is no longer a site of our interminable struggle with negativity. Religion, shorn of philosophy, is now a vending machine for manifestation and fulfillment. That's why there are so many lowercase gods in this secular cynical era. Oblivious to the contradictions, we yearn for spiritual practices that will make us worthy of receiving permanent answers and solutions. A boy band like this," Masterson's Wave the Picture of Moon, "is one such god. Here we have data disguised as philosophy, information disguised as art. We no longer go to church once a week. We attend a stadium concert once a year." This was a quote by her current boyfriend, who she for a while told people was her adopted brother. So I was like, what's happening? This is one of those moments in which when he discovers her love for Moon, and she gets very offended that he would talk about Moon in such a calm and casual manner. Wasn't it very interesting, odd segue of like reality for her.
Right. And I do love that quote, "We attend a stadium concert once a year," because it's true. And I was thinking about it, and I've read quotes from the author about what she was kind of intending to capture here, and the relationship between religion and fandom. And I mean, it's true. You're in a concert, you're in a stadium, you're singing all the songs, you know all the things. Like, it's so important to you that you attend, that you have to do these kind of rituals around. It's very interesting.
Again, she kind of hits on this one character, but like in the reality, a lot of the fans, diehard fans, follow the different groups. I've seen a lot of TikTok videos when BTS's last shows, they went to several different cities, including going to Seoul to try to watch them for the final time. So like so many, there are fans who, if they have the disposable income, which by the way is a big TikTok trend right now, will do these things. And it is not just a show.
Right.
For many of them. Mm-hmm. In another quote, "He feeds my imagination more than you do." Of course he does, Masterson says, "because he exists in your imagination. He's a person breathing, eating, and dreaming in Seoul. And I'm a person breathing, eating, and dreaming in Berlin." Masterson reached over to give my thigh a painful squeeze. "And I know you exist."
Right. Here's another quote. "I think what you mean is that he designs his lyrical content and sexual appeal with the specific intent of exploiting the most basic of human emotions, like loneliness or the desire for unconditional love, and then derives massive profit from his vampirism. I rolled off the bed and began to dress, tucking the picture into my pocket. He works 100 times harder at our relationship than you do," I said, jamming my foot into my shoe with an aggressive twist of the ankle. "He has physical therapy every day because his tendons are on the constant brink of snapping. Can you say the same about your tendons?" yes. So this is all on her mind. She's having these conversations. And then this brings us to online fan culture. Here is a quote. "I discovered Archmage not long afterward. The website contained thousands of fan-written stories organized by the celebrity or fictional character featured in them. There were smaller categorizations based on the story's emotive instigation, tagged with what each story, quote, makes you, ellipses. My favorite stories about Moon almost always had the tag, makes you end friendships. Frankly, most of the stories were unreadable. After all, the authors weren't writers, but fans who had turned to language as a last resort. I could feel the frustration mounting as the prose grew ever more sodden, as the author submitted to yet another cliche, hoping their strange feelings would foment, coherently limbed, out of the primordial soup of failing story. But I preferred these stories to most contemporary novels, which mirrored the pieties of the day with absurd ardor. For all the lone superiority suggested by their tone of moral indignation, these books were mind-numbingly easy to agree with. I preferred reading fans and dead people because they were hard to agree with. I couldn't stop thinking about my two lovesick characters, so I took my scenes and copied them into a dedicated notebook, then continued the story there. Once I'd completed what felt like a chapter, I typed out the text and published it on Archmage under the username FloorFloor. So this is interesting because we have talked about this. You can see our past episodes on K-pop and fanfiction, by the way. but one of the things about fanfiction is that it is, you can argue, you can disagree, you can agree. I recently had somebody leave a comment on one of mine that it's like, this feels so alive because you can like, connect with each other. They can give you ideas and you'll put them in and it changes what you thought it was going to be. And that is often very beautiful and fun. And I think a key aspect of fan fiction, but it can be toxic as fuck. Like I don't, a lot of that I've like cut out of my experience, but I remember it and I have seen it. It still exists. But people get like angry if you perhaps portray the person they love the most in a way they don't like. A big part of that used to be don't like, don't read, but now it's become more like I feel I have to defend this person. So here's a quote from Yi about fanfiction. I think for that reason, I find fanfiction especially really interesting and a really rich mode of expression that, of course, a lot of people look down on because it's, you know, it lacks a certain literary polish. But I respect that about fanfiction. Like, I respect that fanfiction is so much the product of a compulsion, of a yearning, that it almost forgoes all these pretensions of polish, of quality, of sophistication. And in that sense, for me, there's something that's revealed at the heart of fanfiction that I think is essential to all great literature, which is this desire to put yourself in the same space as the transcendental, you know, to almost touch the hem of it without really quite grasping it. Yes. So I think this is interesting because I've talked about this a lot. You can read fanfiction that, in my opinion, is better than what they're making. But it is true that there's something very liberating about, like, let's just skip that part and get to what we all want. Like, there's really bad fan fiction. There's really good fan fiction. And I think there's a place for all of it. But it does. Some of it is like really telling and like, oh, this is what a lot of us are craving or don't find in a lot of the literature or entertainment that we have.
Yeah. I was actually going to read another quote because she had a different interview. And the interview, I feel like, are different for NPR and this specific one because this one was for centerforfiction.org. Her answers sound a lot more like her book. Mm-hmm. So the language is different, but the interviewer asked, you know, why did she bring fan fiction, why in fan fiction as a way to outlet to this character's desire, and then whether it's interspersed or incorporated and to a different level of the way she needed to tell her story. And so she replies with, I'm intrigued by the words interspersed and incorporated. They suggest that the fanfic can be cleanly separated from the rest of the novel, raisins in a piece of bread. There's also the implication that the fanfic's position is one of subordination, as if the non-fanfic parts constitute the main world of the novel, because the stakes there are higher and the events are, quote, real, as if the fanfic is thusly, quote, fake. A place where my narrator lets her imagination careen beyond the bounds of reason. A playroom for everything that doesn't fit into her, quote, real life. I don't view her fic in any of these ways. I can speak from personal experience. My writing is not less real than me. In fact, my writing is better at being me than I am. So I thought that was interesting because she wants to make sure you understand as the reader, don't get this wrong. The fanfic is not just added. It is mm-hmm. the story. Like, she's like, it is as real as the rest of the story. So I thought that was an interesting quote mm-hmm. and fit beautifully in. So another quote from the book. I wasn't sure how to navigate a space filled with strangers who knew I loved what they loved. It was like going to the sauna, except our naked bodies were identical, which made the embarrassment recursive and pointless. And of course, I think that's for a lot of those. As much as I don't know, I do know being young and thinking I could be, if we just met,
yeah,
he might see me. like that whole moment. And in that understanding, when you're not by yourself loving something and coming to a group, it feels like it lost this luster a little bit.
Right. For sure. And that's one of the things with something like a YN fanfiction is like, it's interesting that it's not the writer. It's interesting that it's like anyone's reading it, insert your name. But as the writer, then it's sort of like, this is a very strange place to be where we're all experiencing this desire or want or whatever it is. And it's, I'm not unique, I guess, but you keep trying to find ways to tell yourself like, no, I'm unique, I'm unique. But I also think it's funny for me as I started posting fan fiction, there's just certain number of authors you see a lot if you're in the same space and you start being like, oh, it's you. But then if they don't comment, then you're like, oh, no, I've done something horribly wrong. No, it's just funny, especially for me, because I'm in such a niche, smaller space that you just start to recognize names and you're like, there's something about us that if we met in real life, either we'd hate each other or we'd really get along. It's hard to say.
You'd either be nemesis or best friends.
Yes. I like
or maybe
to
nemesis turn to best friends or lovers.
Yeah. Ooh, popular fan fiction trope.
I know.
Yes. And this brings us to parasocial relationships, which we've done an episode on. This is basically kind of the, like, when you feel you have a relationship with someone you don't know, usually a celebrity. Just because you experience their life through social media or whatever entertainment, which we'll talk about in a second, kind of our experience with them. But here's a quote. It had all started when she stumbled upon a piece of YN fanfiction, which she explained was a type of fanfiction where the protagonist was called YN or your name. Wherever YN appeared in the text, the reader could plug in their own name, thereby sharing events with the celebrity they had no chance of meeting in real life. Reading her first YN story, Lise had learned incredible things about herself. At 19, she gave birth to Moon out of wedlock and was forced by her aristocratic family to leave him at an orphanage. He grew up to become a truck driver who specialized in transporting prize horses. This was how she reunited with her son, who strode up to the gates of her estate with a chestnut mare rearing at his side. The two recognized each other without exchanging a word. What commenced was a dreamlike summer in which the pair covered great distances side by side. She on horseback, Moon in his truck. Only after finishing the story did Lise find out about the pack of boys, their fame, how Moon sang and danced alongside the others. But all of this mattered little to her. Hungry to uncover new facets of herself, she began to read one YN story after another. So I thought that was interesting because sometimes, yes, people read fan fiction of something they don't know anything about.
The plot twist of the fact that the author looked similar to Moon, mm-hmm. and the fact that this was done at a convention that was like a convention for the specific boy band, mm-hmm. and they had different people pretending to be the boys, mm-hmm. and the main character is asked to be Moon and walks around, and people are taking pictures and just like falling in love with her as Moon, mm-hmm. including Lise, who they already had an interaction because they had been with the same boy, Masterson. Mm-hmm. And then now she's kind of falling in love with the main character who also wrote one of the YN novels or YN fanfic that she started to read and was falling in love with that character too.
Yes. I thought that was interesting because, again, I do think a lot of times the YN part is about you. So the fact that she looks like Moon, I think, was pretty clear.
Yes.
Here's another quote. The engineer straightened out his back like a displeased patriarch. YN fic puts me to sleep, he said. In order to accommodate the biography of every reader that might chance upon the story, the writer creates a character void of personality. But there can be no story without a proper protagonist. So there is never a story when it comes to YN. There are only absurd and arbitrary leaps in plot. All of this amounts to a warning, one I urge you to heed. Anyone who pursues the delusional fantasy of being Moon's chosen one can expect to have their identity wiped out. This, he gestured at our table, the event, is so much bigger than you. You are not YN. All of us are, all at once. No, Lee said without blinking, only I'm YN. She recounted how, wanting to know what it was like to be neighbors with Moon, she started reading a story in which he lived in Berlin. To her disturbance, he turned out to be just like her ex. They were both philosophers, and they had read the same books, hung out at the same bars. They even had the same birthmark on the inside of their left thighs, and they both waved like a madman whenever they saw her approaching from a distance. The YN of that story couldn't have been me, she said. Because that YN was to me. The point is that I'm no longer me. I'm YN. I've taken my destiny into my own hands, and I've decided that I am now a person who knows Moon. It appeared that Lise had read my story on Archimage. I've been saying Archmage, but it's Archimage. Sorry. I tried to meet her eyes once more, but she kept her gaze on the engineer, which I found admirably resilient, given his look of intensifying disdain. One person can't possibly be so many different people, he said. You say you're YN, but you're really no one at all. You're the placeholder itself, a vacancy waiting to be filled. Exactly, Lee said with a dreamy smile. Moon is a feat of singularity. There has never been anyone like him, and there never will be. He is too specific, too unusual. I must try my hand at being everyone if I am to coincide with him. He stays in one place. I roam endlessly. You can go listen to the episodes we did on Mary Sue, but that is a similar thing where people often say that she is a placeholder for the author. She is bland, perhaps, so that anyone can be her. But I feel like a lot of people bring what they think. You do kind of make it your own, I guess. Because it is a placeholder thing, you can be like, well, she's like me in this way, in this way, in this way. So it's interesting to read this exchange where he's like, everybody's YN, which is true. But she's like, but no, only me. But what I feel like she's saying is when you take that position, it does become something kind of unique to you because you're filling all of the like blankness with yourself and your personality. I don't know. It's kind of hard to describe, but.
Yeah,
I think both are good points.
I think to that level is what she's seeing herself is not herself, and what she mm-hmm. wants to be.
Yes.
So that's
yes.
why when she said that's to me, because she knew that relationship because it was based on this one dude.
Right.
Interspersed with this one dude being Masterson, who we talked about earlier, interspersed with Moon, because that's how the author or the narrator wrote it, was mm-hmm. based on him, which is also why she becomes obsessed with him later, because mm-hmm. she's kind of somehow transferred what she had seen Moon as to him, Masterson, and then also, yeah, mm-hmm. interspersed the two of them. But yeah, like having that saying that it's to me, so that wasn't me. I can't be that because that's not right. where I want to be, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later because I think that's another misunderstanding people have. But sometimes it's a self-imagined fulfillment. Like, I wish I would be this person.
Yeah.
But if you were ever confronted with the reality of it, you don't want it. It's just like imagining. It's like, yeah. Oh, okay, let me imagine this. But in reality, no, thank you.
No, thank you. And here's some more quotes from the book. Somehow, I'd never imagined Moon as an infant. I'd also never imagined him dying. He seemed to have come into the world already complete, and I expect him to disappear in the same way, which honestly could say something about K-pop fandom in general, especially when we talk about young deaths and tragic deaths or whatnot. When they kind of disappear, they kind of disappear. When they fade out of the limelight, not many people think about it anymore, and they do just disappear. You don't think about their past too much because their present is what you look for and what you fell in love with. And then when the time dies out and if you get in a new interest,
yeah,
they disappear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's true that it's like the idea of it to me, it's speaking to this sort of celebrity culture we don't view. Sometimes we forget celebrities are human. And so you don't, of course, he was never a baby. Of course, he was never going to die. He's not human. You don't kind of give them that space or think about that space because that would interrogate, like, well, what are we participating in then? Well, what is he going through then? Like, as a human person.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And then this quote is from when they make an announcement that Moon is retiring, and oh dear. No details followed the news of Moon's retirement. The other boys retreated from public view and indefinitely suspended the release of their next album. Online, the turmoil was titanic. Had Moon quit of his own free will? Was he dead? Had he relocated to the moon, surrendering himself to scientific progress and betrothing himself to a metaphor? I really like that. Just kind of, again, there was a lot of this in the book where the surreal conversation, it was bigger than it needed to be. And at one point, there's a line which he says, he is my gasoline. Like, I don't, it was such an odd line that I was like, it took me out of the book completely. That I was like, was that a mistranslation? Or was that just purposely blown to be so flowery that it did the opposite of, like, instead of engaging me, it made me think, what just happened? Did she mean to say that? I know writing is hard. Definitely, this book is definitely that intensive level of like making sure you're kind of spinning around the words rather than just laying on them. That sounded like a flowery description in itself, but that's the only way I can think of it.
I think it's also, though, like it's supposed to be the drama of when you're a fan of something.
Everything feels inclement and like
everything
dire.
Everything feels so big. Everything feels so
double
big.
Double meaning of everything. And then not just a single word. You can't be abrupt. You must make the descriptor so long that you forget what you were originally talking about.
Oh, like the, God, I wish I hadn't burned my fanfiction. I would read it. You guys, you would laugh so hard. But I would write like this, like it was life or death, whether we could meet each other. Like it was so important to me.
Yeah. Was this about Keanu?
No. Maybe we should come back and do this. I was going to go into my, because I've had three, I would say, that were pretty big. Keanu Reeves, I like, I don't think I ever engaged in the actual fanfic part of it, or even in my head, because a lot of times I didn't write it necessarily. But Billy Joe Armstrong, Daniel Radcliffe, Ryan Gosling, kind of not. I was too young, I guess.
Yeah. You weren't quite formed to say those flowery words for Ryan Gosling.
I did write him a letter that was dotted in hearts, though.
Oh, yes.
I'm actually going to talk about this in a second, but I want to read this quote first. "It's fine if I never meet him," I said, staring at the ceiling. "I just like the feeling of us moving through time together. I need him there. I need to know that at this very moment, he's looking down at his hand somewhere in the world. It's possible that I might have figured him out all wrong, that my imagination has turned him into an absurd caricature. Even then, I need to know that I'm doing all of this fallacious work in reaction to something that's real. You don't need him back. You don't even need him alive. Just pretend he's the main character of your favorite movie, and now this movie's over." So again, this is like when her and Masterson are kind of having this big falling out fight over this whole thing. But it did remind me, I think I've told this story before, but I will go into it in our magazine episode. I had a huge crush on Ryan Gosling as young Hercules. Samantha knows I finally secured the DVD.
Yes, she did.
I'm very, very excited. I'm sure it won't hold up and it's going to be great. But I had a really huge crush on him to an embarrassing point that everyone knew it when I was like 9 years old. Like all, not even friends, like everyone knew it. And I had a moment when I think I was 9 or 10. My mom found me crying. And she was like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I've just realized I'm never going to be with Ryan Gosling." And to her credit, she like held me and did not laugh in my face. But it was true. Like you had that moment of, I remember, it sounds so jaded now, but it's funny. I remember thinking, well, he's like twice my age. He's really hot. He's got a lot more going on than me, and he pretty much lives in New Zealand. Like, I was taking it, like, seriously.
Oh, you were trying to calculate the possibilities?
Yes. Oh, no. It's embarrassing. I'm getting blushed thinking about it. But I, oh, dear. I will talk about it. It's pretty funny. But I did have that moment where I kind of mourned, but then I moved on. Kind of that, like, you know, the movie's over. Which is interesting, because after that, I did move on. I never came back to Ryan Gosling. But I did want to put in here, because sometimes some of you listeners write in, and you'll talk about parasocial relationships or how you feel like you know us, not in a creepy way, I'll say. But, you know, just kind of like, hey, yeah, I feel like I know you. And I think that makes sense, especially with a podcast like ours, because I was thinking about this, like a lot of the stuff you get with celebrities is pretty like polished, like PR managed interviews. But with us, you know, we're kind of just talking about our lives. And I experienced that as an editor, where I would feel like I just knew someone so much, mm-hmm. and they didn't have any idea who I was. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it is sort of strange. But it is a part of our media landscape. But I think it's different than this. Because I do think there's a difference between like a celebrity where they like almost have scripts of what to say. So you never really know them. I mean, mm-hmm. it's true. Like you don't really know us either. But I feel like we're much more kind of ourselves versus I feel like celebrities are much more like a image of themselves.
Right. Well, also with K-pop, they are created by the agency, their personality, their level of fashion, their face, their style. They are created to be a specific image, to fulfill a specific idea and typically a specific role in that group. I think it's changed since the beginning of that. Like, I know more recently people, and maybe this is the fandom being like, no, that's not true. I don't know, but like it seems like people, with the fact that there's social media in existence now, that they can't quite get away with as much pristine like cleanups as they did once upon a time, because truth will eventually come out. But at the same time, yeah, for the most part, like, and especially with K-pop, they have a lot of morality stuff that are in place by the agencies that if you, you know, are caught with cigarettes, you might get kicked out of the band. If you're caught with a girlfriend, you might, or a boyfriend, you might be kicked out of the band. Infidelity, any of those things, so they're like, you're gone. So a lot of this from the stark contrast from us just talking with our bosses, sometimes not knowing that we exist.
Yeah. Woo! Here's another quote kind of about that. You've settled for a comfortable distance from him so that you can yearn without suffering. Sorry, but you're not in love. You're a fan. Boring, lethargic, overfed. If you really loved him, you'd be in Seoul right now. You'd be walking the streets day and night in search of him. The magnitude of the task would crush you until you became a ball of pulp containing just your heart. All other organs crushed into dysfunction.
Such a weird statement to be said by a psychologist, by the way. Like, challenging. I dare you.
Yeah, well, she did. She was like, I'll go.
I was like, who would do this?
Well, yeah, but I thought that was interesting because it is, I do think that point of like you're a fan and that like line about being overfed, I feel like you're getting so much stuff as a fan was important. And this kind of like point of the safety of loving something or someone you cannot have, I've read, she's talked about that in interviews. And I do think that's true for a lot of people. Like I was saying, when you write a self-insert, like you don't really want it. But it's kind of fun to imagine. I think that a lot of people aren't, even if in the back of your head, you're like, oh, if we met, I know it. But you're also kind of like, I'm not going to do the effort. I will just write this thing. That's fine.
I'm not trying to reach out to him or anything. I'll see his movie. End of story.
I'll write him a letter that I later hope was destroyed before he could read it. So then, yes. After this sort of like ultimatum, she decides to go to Seoul. The narrator decides to go to Seoul. And the conversation continues. You would really do that. His tone was not of gratitude, but of intense hurt. Don't you understand that he went away because he wanted to? Perhaps that's what troubles me most, that even he could no longer endure it. Yes. The pressure is so intense. And then you have kind of what we've been discussing throughout is sort of this construction of an avatar that you feel ownership over or entitlement to. Like, I really think a lot of celebrity culture is you're going after somebody who doesn't exist. It's the creation of them in your mind and on social media and entertainment you want, but not the real person.
Right. Again, when we look about, and I we talked about this previously a little bit, about the fact that she chose K-pop for a reason. But like, K-pop is the epitome of creating someone for the fan. Mm-hmm. They like, and the level of ownership given to fandoms is incredibly almost dangerous, which is why things have like been, people are like, maybe you need to back off, or maybe there needs to be laws to protect celebrities as well, even though you would think they would be protected. But not in South Korea. But yeah, there's this level of that whole, they were catered and created in hopes that the fandom would take them all. You have biases in this type of conversation that doesn't really exist in any other kind of celebrity culture outside of K-pop, because they want it to be that level. They want you to own things that their face is on, kind of like her cosmetic set or her skin routine that she talks about throughout the a book as well, that because she wants to look more like them.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next quote, it says, to my pleasure, he picked up the notebook and began to read aloud. And this is where she finds him and Moon is starting to read her fan fiction. Mm-hmm. I relished the gaminess of his accent. It sounded impossible to fix. He paused when he came across the word YN. He tried to pronounce it as yin, but immediately reconsidered settling with YN. Each time he uttered the abbreviation, I increasingly understood myself in the sound, the breathy insubstantiality of Y, which was pulled down the throat by the density of N. He seemed to be asking why of my existence, why I was what I was.
Yeah, so this is, she does get to meet Moon.
Which I was trying to figure out if this was real.
It's definitely meant to make you question it. But I think it was real. I think some of it wasn't, but I think it was. But also, I think that she did the thing. She, of the self-insert fanfiction, you meet the person, and then she's like, no, this isn't real. This isn't right. This isn't, because it's not the person she's created. So here's a quote from her. I'm not a stranger. You know me. All of your videos, pictures, messages, they were for me. Don't make that face. It's true. You couldn't have known it at the time since you didn't know who I was, but you didn't need to. Our connection preceded us. I have spent my entire life training myself to feel the feelings I have for you. My perception has been perfectly notched to match the gear of your personality. Don't think I haven't heard this all before, he said. Yes. And I think that's interesting in terms of like, because she does, she kind of gets mad and is like, oh, it's not you. It's not you who I thought you would be.
Right.
And then she sort of is, okay, well, I'll go back to my real Moon, which is the one in her fan fiction. But that idea of like, okay, this is all for me. Like this, you were specifically speaking to me. I am the unique one. I am the YN that matters. I think that's also fascinating in terms of how celebrities are pressured into like social media and it's meant to make you feel that way. We've talked about that in terms of like a lot of the songs, those like popular romantic songs are meant to make you feel they're singing to you. That is what the whole point is, to kind of have that idea of like, well, to take that and to seriously be like, okay, you don't know who I am, but it was me all along.
Right. There's an interesting thing. She actually talks about parasocial relationships and how she does not like it in mm-hmm. this context. So I'm going to read it real quick from the same interview for the Center for Fiction. It says, I've seen the word parasocial used to describe my narrator's relationship with Moon. I dislike that word because it pretends to clarify when it actually obscures. If the implication of parasocial is that my narrator knows Moon falsely through image, through what he represents, than what he really is, then it seems to me that all relationships are parasocial, especially so-called love relationships. Have I ever really known anyone, including myself? I'm pretty sure I have a parasocial relationship with myself. In any case, parasociality is precisely what my narrator is trying to escape.
Interesting. Right. She wants to know like a real thing.
But at the same time, she's disappointed by the real thing because exactly. it's not what's in her head, which is parasocial. This author is interesting. I like her takes. Keep going.
Yes. Well, I have another quote. This one's from the NPR article. I don't see the novel as a cautionary tale against anything, to be honest. It's simply documenting this one individual's attempt to perhaps experience something beyond the boundaries of her given conditions, beyond the boundaries of her human consciousness, which, of course, for any person is an extremely dangerous thing to embark upon. Either you are sent over to the other side and possibly you never come back to reality, you never survive it to tell the story, or you come back and you're probably a little bit destroyed, to put it mildly. Yeah, I think the narrator is certainly skirting some kind of boundary, testing some kind of boundary between reality and fantasy. And she does have a lot of quotes about mass consumption, how we consume media currently as mass consumption. And how we interact and enjoy art in our modern times, and how that can lead to blurring of these lines. And so at the end, yes, there is this whole thing where the narrator comes back, meets back with O has this documentary, like short film, that has painting in it of the narrator. And the narrator keeps asking to see the painting. Like, I want to see the real thing. And O is like, you're missing the point. Like, if you want that, then I don't know if I can. So it's sort of that idea. The narrator is always trying to find this, quote, real thing, but is never happy with it, is never satisfied with it, doesn't believe it, which I think is interesting. There's also a quote from that NPR article about there is something in her that is in all of us, and that's about the being anonymous online, like we never have the name. And I did try the YN thing in this book, which is where you put your name in every time you see YN, and it was unsettling, which I believe was the intent.
Yeah, I would not like that, because I already thought this book was like definitely out of my style. Mm-hmm. It might, so like that would have made me real uncomfortable, because this is not a thing that I yeah, this is not one thing I would pick up by myself.
It was interesting. I've never done that, I don't think. Because again, it's not, I don't want to be in it. I just want, not me. Which I think is a whole other thing. But I tried it. It was okay. Yeah. It made me feel a certain way.
Yeah, it made me like, I was just like, huh? Again, like, there's just moments of like trying to figure it out and trying to be like, I don't know if I feel sad for this person, for the narrator, because she's going to be unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I'm just concerned mm-hmm. for the narrator, because there's some red flags, obviously. I was going to read this because I think it's pretty on point with Yi, but she says about the writing of the book, all I learned from writing YN is how to write YN. I don't seem to have learned how to write novels in general. I could never write something like YN again. My thinking has changed too much. I wrote most of YN on the pure benzene of instinct, almost blithely and desperately, which, not paradoxically, made me very fastidious at the microscopic level of the text. I suspect that whatever I write next will be the reverse. It'll have to account for the, quote, relaxed ruthlessness that has come to dominate my style of thinking since YN.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting, too, because, like, that sounds like writing fan fiction to me. That is what, you just have to write it. You just get in this mind space. So that makes sense. here's another one last quote from Yi. I always imagine Moon almost as a knife, kind of a violent figure. I don't mean that in a willful way, but that he seems to be exposing some kind of wound or void in these characters' lives. And it's both offering fulfillment, but also exposing that void. And I think the exposure of that void can be full of potential for an individual who's experiencing that. But it can also be a moment of great, of course, it's leaving open a lot of possibility for disappointment, for lack of fulfillment.
Right.
Yeah, that void.
It's true. I mean, yeah, we didn't talk about the part where it's implied that he's what brought the group together. And without him, they all fell apart and felt like they lost a part of themselves. So they were trying to find the new Moon with the fans, it seemed, when they all won to go meet them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, I didn't know if that was a fanfic portion or the real book.
I think that was real, but that's also like, it's true. In fandom, it can be so strange because you can feel something so strongly. And then if it goes away, it's almost like, scary where you're like, well, what? I could never ever give up on this person I love so much. And then years later I'm like, Ryan Gosling. Like it's a bizarre
Ryan Gosling, who?
Where you kind of like you feel you would never, ever, it would be a betrayal to like let them go. And then you find something else.
You always do.
Yeah, but it is it's a part of fandom that you've heard me talk about it. I'm like, one day I won't want to dress as this anymore. And it's like such a silly thing, but it's true. Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yes, there you go. It's a short read. It is very intense.
There's a lot to unfold. Yes. There might be some rereading that needs to happen.
I had to reread the end. Because I was like, wait, hold on.
It does, again, it makes me a little sad more than anything else, I will say. And I'm not sure if that was her point to that. But yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's mostly about like loneliness.
Mm-hmm. And fulfillment.
Yeah. Yep. And not being able to find that. So, well, we've come out strong in 2024. as always, if you have any suggestions, listeners, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at stephanieandmomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter at @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram and TikTok at Stuff I Never Told You. We have a Tee Public store, and we also have a book you can get wherever you get your books. I talk about Mary Sue in there. Lots of fan fiction stuff. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Christina, our executive producer, Maya, and our contributor, Joey.
Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. Stuff I Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy. Yeah. Right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to a Cross Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.